It's time for The Rest is History, and this Saturday is the anniversary of the first intercity brass band competition in New Zealand. In 1880, 2,500 people gathered in the Christchurch Drill Hall to watch six bands play to win. Since then, brass bands have remained hugely popular around the country. To explain what they're all about and why they have always drawn huge crowds, I'm joined tonight by David Bremner. As well as being the principal trombone in the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, David is the musical director of the National Brass Band of New Zealand. Tēnā koe, David.
Kia ora, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. How easy is it to judge brass bands, just thinking back to 1880? What would they have been looking for?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. So I was doing a little bit of reading today about what that contest would have been like, and it could not be more different to the contests that are held today. The contest back then, it would have been a lot of sort of concert items. So I think bands played things like the William Tell Overture and polkas and pieces like that. They also had a section which was for sight reading. So they would have been given a piece of music and they would have had to have performed it straight away. And actually, in not this year of the contest, the first contest, but the next year, a band actually stopped while they were doing the sight reading to gasps of the audience, which apparently was very funny. And the whole audience was convinced that that band would not win, but they actually did go on to win that competition. So it couldn't be more different to what we have now at our national contest, which is you have a sort of you play a hymn or a sacred item, and then a set work which all the bands play in your grade, and then you choose one piece to play by yourself. So it would have been very, very different. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in one of those contests and see actually what it would have been like.
And just back in 1881, when that band stopped, they stopped because they just couldn't read the music and play anymore.
Well, apparently the conductor was singing the main line, so he was singing along, like trying to get them to keep going and yelling at them when they were supposed to come in, but it was apparently quite a bit of a debacle. And the audience, it's hard to tell, but it also seems like the audience decided who won the first contest. It wasn't like a judge who decided. The audience must be some kind of popular vote, which is also, the polar opposite of how things would happen now, because the judging is such a I've judged a few contests, and it's not a very enjoyable experience sitting in a tent all day and listening to bands, and then only one band likes you at the end of the results, so it's not a very nice situation.
I'm feeling the pressure of that already just following you. Before we get into the history part of it, when you are judging brass bands now, what are you looking for?
Well, I mean, for me personally, I'm always a big believer that, before you hear all the flashy, playing that you look forward to hearing, bands need to have the complete control of the basics of playing a brass instrument and percussion instrument, which is, to have a good sound and a good good intonation, good rhythm the band plays together, that they're balanced. So you can hear all the instruments that you need to hear at that time, and particularly always you can always hear the melody or the solo instrument. So those things, I think, once they're ticked, then you look for the bands that have the flair and that can go fast and loud and high, all the things you love to hear with brass instruments. But every adjudicator at contests is very different, and they're looking for something completely different. You have adjudicators that come from orchestral backgrounds. You have adjudicators that come from brass band backgrounds. So they've all got their own little, pet things in their head that they're listening for. And sometimes when you're judging at a contest, I judged the Australian National Championships, and there were, I think, 15 bands in the A grade that I judged. And you start to get fixated on one thing that sometimes a lot of the bands struggle with, and it could just be something like the percussion play too loud or they're out of tune. And sometimes it's really hard to get past that and to look at the positives, because you're so sort of bogged down with this these negatives. So it is a very strange experience to judge a contest. But there's every adjudicator is completely different.
So let's get to the history of brass bands in New Zealand. When did they arrive?
Well, they would have been, you know, I mean, as soon as the English arrived, they would have bought their brass instruments. So the bands would have been set up. I think the earliest bands, in fact, I'm from New Plymouth originally, and I think some of those Taranaki garrison bands would have been the earliest bands to have been in existence. You know, they would have been garrisoned, so I think they were, you know, immediately linked with the military. But there were also, I'm not exactly sure when the Ratana band started. I know the Whanganui has the one of the Ratana bands, I think the seven Ratana bands. But so even within the Māori traditions of music, they had brass bands as well. I'm not sure exactly when that started, but certainly by the early 1900s, I would say most towns in New Zealand had a brass band that would have been used for, significant events in that town. Of course, you know, things like world wars changed a lot of that, and a lot of those musicians never returned home. But the bands have steadily grown through the 20th century until now. A lot of towns have multiple bands, and they have such long, steeped history. So it's a fascinating story, really, of the brass band history in New Zealand.
What constitutes a brass band? Does there have to be X number of trumpets, X number of trombones, and certain percussive instruments, or can you choose? Yeah. How does it work?
There's lots of different versions of a brass band. I mean, there's the traditional English brass band, which is has, I think, what have we got, 9 cornets, 10 cornets, including a soprano cornet, then a flugelhorn, 3 tenor horns, 2 baritones, 2 euphoniums. Some of these words probably sound like gobbledygook to most of the listeners.
But keep going, though, it's great.
3 trombones, 4 tubas, and percussion. That's a traditional brass band. There's usually 25 brass plus percussion. And that's really stayed the same from the days of the early English bands in the coal mines, which is where all these bands come from. They would be down in the pit during the day, and then they'd come out and play in band at night. And that sort of traditional format of a brass band hasn't really ever changed. But there's also other sorts of brass bands. There's the New Orleans-style brass band, which is just whatever instruments you can get, and plays usually sousaphones and trombones and trumpets. And if you walk, down New Orleans on any night of the week, you'll hear a brass band honking out music. So there are lots of different sorts of brass bands. But the traditional English band, which is sort of the model that most bands in New Zealand are of that nature, has sort of 25 brass instruments and percussion.
So in a 19th century New Zealand town, they had a brass band because they had to have one. It was necessary, or because everyone was already playing an instrument that would constitute a band, and therefore the band existed?
I mean, the brass band sound is sort of ingrained in English history. And, when that came to New Zealand, that sound came with them, the instruments came. And so I think it was just part of, you know, a lot of the English immigrants that came to New Zealand, they bought their brass instruments, and the brass band, you know, continued in that way. But, other countries in the Pacific also have a history of brass bands. If you look at Tonga, I think it was King Tupou, maybe the first, I'm not exactly sure which number, but he, I think the story goes that he went to the UK for a trip, might have been in the 50s or 60s, and he heard an English-style brass band. I think he bought a whole set of instruments and brought them back for his old school. And Tupou College in Tongatapu had a whole brass band of players, and now every school pretty much in Tonga has a brass band. So they have this, you know, heaped history of brass band as well, but they don't traditionally play English or colonial sort of music. They play Tongan music through the instruments, and they read on a different music notation. which is, I've been over to Tonga many times teaching a lot of the kids there, and I struggled to even understand how the notation of music works there, but it's fascinating, and they all read it, and it's incredible. So they've got their own history as well, which is a very Tongan history, but it's through those traditional English brass band instruments.
And also there's the uniforms, right? A brass band isn't a brass band without its uniform. How's that put together?
Yeah, well, you can imagine back in 1880, they would have just been very military, garrison-looking uniforms. And through the years, I'd love to say that brass bands in New Zealand have evolved in this regard, but we haven't. We've probably, stayed the same, if not gone backwards a little bit. Some of that, if you look at the modern brass band in New Zealand, most of them still have very old-school uniforms. That are sort of a throwback to those days. And if you see at a national contest, there's always a marching element where they march down the street and they're judged on if they're standing in line and in the music and every aspect of marching. And the uniforms are exactly the same pretty much as they would have been back in 1880. So it's kind of a throwback to watch some of those bands walk down the street and sort of, you know, not too far away from what it would have been like 140 odd years ago.
This is a question I've had for a really long time, and I can finally get to ask you. How easy is it to blow and walk, to play and march? How easy is that?
It's not easy, and it's a bit tricky. But the more you do it, the easier it gets, and the more you get used to it. The hardest thing about marching with an instrument is, I mean, depending on the size, like a trombone sticks straight out, so your arms get tired when you're walking with a trombone sticking out. A cornet or a trumpet's absolutely fine because it's light. But you can imagine the players with the tubas or the bass drum walking down the street. That gets it's a good workout. But the other factor also is that our national contest now, I think the national contest, the first one was in April, so the weather would have been okay, but our national contest now is in July. And the contest this year is in Christchurch. So you can imagine the marching on a Friday for the lunchtime is cold, and these big hunks of metal do get very cold. So it's not the most enjoyable experience, marching with a big brass instrument, but it is fun being part of that sound and hearing, you know, that when a band walks down the street, especially, I mean, one of my first memories of brass bands was my dad was actually a member of the Woolston band in Christchurch for many years before my parents moved to New Plymouth. And I was a little kid and we were at the national contest and we finished marching with the New Plymouth band and my dad said, quick, come with me, you know, and we ran around to these corners and we got back to hear the Woolston band step off, and I just remember the sound of hearing that band walk down the street was just immense, you know, and I'll never forget that sound of the trombones just really honking. I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome.
It had its own distinctive sound, the Woolston band.
Yeah, well, they've always been traditionally not only one of the best bands on the concert stage, but also marching. They take marching very, very seriously, and they've been champion marching band many, many times. Whereas I conduct the Wellington Brass Band here, and when I took over the band, must have been sort of 13, 14 years ago now, it was full of students, and none of them knew how to march. So marching's never been high on our agenda, not like Woolston. So when you hear Woolston march down the street, it's very, very impressive. And when Wellington Brass marches down the street, it's usually a lot of fun, put it that way.
One final question on the marching aspect of things. Where are you looking when you're marching with your instrument and playing the music?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you're looking ahead. It's very tricky, isn't it? Because you don't want to trip. You're also looking at your music, which is on a thing called a lyre, which is stuck to your instrument. So you're reading music, you're marching, and then you've got to watch the drum major who's out the front, who's giving you signals about when you're going to stop or when you're going to walk, turn to the right or the left or whatever happens. So the very good bands make marching look very, very easy, and that's very impressive. And a lot of other bands, and I don't think anyone will mind me saying this, but Australian bands, at the Australian contest, the marching aspect is not to the same standard as New Zealand. contest, and it is quite funny watching the Aussie bands march down the street. It looks like they're sort of just wandering to the cafe for a coffee, as opposed to some of the top bands in New Zealand who take it very seriously. So, but yeah, obviously looking forward and trying not to fall over or trip over the person next to you. So.
Where do you see brass bands heading into the future in New Zealand?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, brass bands, they've just got stronger and stronger in New Zealand, and the standard is so incredibly high. But they're still always seen as community bands, amateur music groups, you know, and that's tough for bands because it's so expensive in the current climate to pay for a mortgage of a band room and power and insurance and all those things. And bands don't really get a lot of support funding-wise from the funding agencies around the country. So I think there's a lot of bands doing it very tough around New Zealand, especially after COVID. And I hope we're not going to see bands sort of falling, you know, by the wayside after COVID. But certainly there's a lot of work going on education front in New Zealand with brass bands. So there's a lot of kids learning brass instruments and percussion instruments through brass bands. And, you know, there's a heck of a lot of good work going on around the country. So I think it's a bright future, but I would, you know, I'd love to see bands get a little bit more support so that they can survive, you know, rather than being on the smell of an oily rag, they can actually, you know, function because they're an integral part of the community for a lot of these towns. You know, you go to the Anzac Day and Christmas Parade, and you always expect to see your local band there at these civic duties. And I think that's a massive part of why bands exist in this country. And I just, you know, I don't like the idea that maybe a band has to fold because they can't afford to exist. And then, you know, those sorts of days are not the same. But then, you know, also the bands love to do things like putting on concerts and being involved in things around the community and other musical events and stuff. So I like to think that brass bands are a really important part of the fabric of a community, and I hope that will last for a long time, and I know there's a lot of people doing a lot of work to make sure that it does.
Great talking with you, David. Thanks so much for your time tonight.
No problems. Thanks.